Thanks very much. Thanks to the Asian American Asian Research Institute at CUNY for inviting me to talk about the work that we're doing to provide mapping tools and data so that organizations can really help understand what the implications are of the 2020 census and how they can use this information to prioritize their Get Out the Count campaigns and do census outreach and education. So we're working closely with civil rights organizations across the country and at the national level to provide this mapping resource. And we launched this with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights in October of 2017. The map that I'm going to show you is a similar version to what we launched leading up to the 2010 census. And it does similar things, but it's updated and with new features and new enhancements. What I'm going to talk about is how you can use the map to understand your community in relation to the 2010 census, and I'll go through some highlights of the map. Excuse me, and I will then talk a little bit about a couple of other aspects that we're updating the map with as the census really kicks in March. So here is an example of what you see when you come to the map. You can search. There are a number of search options in the upper right-hand corner as you're looking at it. And in this particular example, I searched on a congressional district, but you could search for an address. You could search for a county, a census tract, a zip code, you name it. In this case, it zooms into the district, highlights the district on the map. The orange and red areas that you can see on the map are census tracts that in 2010 had a lot of households that did not fill out the census form, and in 2010 it was all by mail, and they didn't mail it back. And that means that if you don't fill out the census form on your own, which is called self-response, the Census Bureau still needs to count you. And so they're actually in the process of hiring hundreds of thousands of people around the country to go door to door starting in May and try to count everyone who didn't self-respond. And that's hard, that's challenging, that's expensive, and that's where the greatest risk is, that people will be missed or counted inaccurately. So we highlight areas that we show on the map as hard to count, where there had to be a lot of that door-to-door census counting in 2010, and it's an indicator of what's going to happen in 2020. If you zoom into the map and select the tracked option in the upper left, and then you click on the map, we provide detailed information for every single census tract in the country. A tract is about, on average, about 4,000 people. It's not quite as small as a Manhattan block, but it's not as big as a zip code or a community district or something like that. So it gives you a pretty fine-grained sense of what's happening in the neighborhood. And so we provide detailed information from 2010, so you can see what the share of households were in 2010 that mailed back the form and whether this is therefore a hard-to-count tract or not. And you could also add other things to display on the map, like libraries. I'll show that in a second. congressional districts and the like. Now, that was 2010 information. We also have incorporated into the map up-to-date population data through 2018 for so-called populations at risk of being undercounted, so being missed more than they should in the census. So for these groups in particular, so people of color, kids under 5, that's the age group that had the biggest undercount rate in 2010, immigrants, people who are low-income populations, people that don't speak English well, things like that. They're all at risk for various reasons of not fully self-responding to me and therefore having to have the Census Bureau come door-to-door and count them in person. And so, again, for each tract, whether it's considered hard to count or not, we provide detailed information for those population groups. This tract in Queens happens to have 40% of the tract foreign-born or immigrants. And so you can see details, though, for all of those characteristics for every tract in the country. And also, we added the ability to not just click on track to track, but to do a search with that advanced search option. And then you could tell the map, I want to see all the tracks in Queens or the Bronx or wherever in any county that meet different criteria. So you could tell it, show me all the tracks where there's over 20% renters and 40% of the households don't have internet access, and et cetera, et cetera. And then it'll highlight those tracks on the map, and you can get that information and really then pinpoint your outreach efforts. We also provide other types of information, not just population data on the map. So this, you use the drop-down list there, and you select things like Census Bureau contact strategies. What does that mean? So starting in March, with the exception of Alaska and some rural parts of Maine, the Census Bureau is either going to be sending out mailings to every household in the country, or in some places they're going to be hand-delivering census packets to invite you to participate, to fill out the census questionnaire. So we've mapped all of that information as well on the hard-to-count map. And so you can see, in this case, these light purple shaded areas in Manhattan, in the Manhattan part of this congressional district anyway, we'll get a mailing that will provide information about how the household can go online to fill out the census questionnaire or call in the information. And you can see on the left, it gives you, you know, some more descriptive information about what that means. What's going to be in the mailing? What other languages they'll have access to about the instructions on how to fill out the census questionnaire. But then also there are some areas like the dark green areas that will receive a mailing, but it'll be bilingual, Spanish and English, and it will actually have the paper questionnaire in the first mailing that you'll get. The Census Bureau will send out as many as 5 mailings to each household if you don't self-respond, and eventually everyone, if you don't self-respond before that, will get the paper questionnaire. But some places, like these areas in dark green, will get the paper questionnaire right up front. so if you are in a household that doesn't have good internet access, or you haven't had good response rates in the past, or it's predominantly a senior household, the Census Bureau's thinking is, well, those households might not be easy for them to fill out the form online, so we're going to send them the paper questionnaire to begin with. So I mentioned that you can go online to fill out the census questionnaire, and the Census Bureau is actually hoping that most households will fill out the census questionnaire online in 2020. So we have information that can help you understand what that means in your local community. So for each tract, we show, in this case, the census tract is pretty good. Only 6% of the households in that tract don't have home internet access. Some tracts, it's a lot more, and you can highlight those on the map, and you could use this slider tool at the bottom. If you click on that blue dot and move it left to right, it'll show with the blue cross-hatching on the map areas that have, or census tracts where a certain percentage of households don't have home internet access. In this case, it's 25% of the households that are highlighted in the blue cross-hatching that don't have internet access. And so that means in some places there's going to be overlap with the tracts that are highlighted in green that are going to get the paper questionnaire, but not every place. There are some areas that won't get the paper questionnaire, and most of the households don't have internet access. So one thing that you as trusted voices in the community can do is you could use the map when the mailings start going out, and people are going to say, I didn't get the paper questionnaire. What's up with that? And you could say, well, you live in an area that you're not going to get the paper questionnaire right up front, and you could use this to help inform local residents what's going on. We've also added some recent information on the map from the Population Reference Bureau about the risk of undercounting children tract by tract. And so the dark blue tracts are high risk. The green tracts are medium risk, the dark blue tracts are very high risk. The green tracts are high risk, and the yellow tracts are low risk of undercounting young children. The Population Reference Bureau did this whole analysis, and we've incorporated that information into the map. So what's the next thing I want to highlight? So starting in mid-March, we're going to be adding information from 2020 about the share of households in each area that have self-responded so far on a day-to-day basis. And so the Census Bureau is going to be publishing all this information, not just for us, but for everyone to access. And so you'll be able to go to a map that the Census Bureau will have, and you could also look at our map that will show every day what the share of households are that self-responded, whether it's online by phone or by mail. The Census Bureau is going to have a separate number for just people that responded online, and then also what the comparable rate was at the end of the self-response phase in 2010. So it's kind of a goalpost. You can see how well your community did in 2010 and how close you are to achieving that as we go through the self-response phase day by day in 2020. I highlighted a couple of examples of the types of areas that the Bureau will be publishing the data for. And here's a sneak peek at what the map will look like once we get access to that information. This shows the patterns of what the rates were in 2010, and then we'll be adding to this when the 2020 data comes out. So I've mentioned what self-response rates are, but why are they important? What does it really mean? So again, it's the number of households that responded on their own divided by the number of all addresses in the Census Bureau's database that they either mailed to or hand-delivered a packet to. That doesn't include things like, you know, nursing homes or dorms or things like that, military installations. It's really where the Census Bureau sends mail to, in New York anyway, and the share of people that self-responded. So that doesn't mean if your community has, by, let's say, the end of April, a 70% self-response rate, that doesn't mean 70% of the people in your community have been counted and that's it. It means that that's the share of households that mailed or that responded on their own. That means also, though, that 30% of the households still need to be counted. And so the Census Bureau will be sending around door-to-door enumerators to knock on your door if you didn't self-respond and try to count you in person. And so that's a big risk. So if you have a low self-response rate, that means that more census takers are going to be in your community knocking on your door. And you know, no one wants to open their door to a government employee, especially the federal government these days. And so that's challenging. That's going to be really hard for those enumerators to try to count all those households. So that's why it's extra special important for trusted messengers and census community groups to get the word out about why it's so important to self-respond. But if you don't, for whatever reason, to make sure you open your door for a census taker when they come around starting in May. But again, this non-response follow-up phase when the door knocking happens, that's a greater chance that people will be missed or counted inaccurately. And so we really want to try to minimize that. So these are the three takeaways, really, that I wanted to emphasize about the map and what the map shows, how you can use it, what's going to be happening once the census kicks in, just a couple of weeks away, and why it's so important to communicate to your neighbors and to others in your community about self-responding, responding to the census on your own so you don't have to have someone come knock on your door after that. Here's the link to the map, and so I definitely urge you to check it out, and it's pretty easy to use, we think. This is a contact information for me. I work at the Graduate Center at the city at CUNY, and we'd be happy to help you figure out how to use this for your local community and answer any questions you have about it. So thanks very much. Let me turn it over now to Howard Shee from the Asian American Federation, who's been analyzing this type of census data for decades and can help explain the importance of the census and how to use this information.
Beyond the research that we do, we also we're primarily a leadership organization that works across the Pan-Asian community, and we work with about 70 other Asian-serving organizations across NYC to help promote Asian Americans and provide leadership development and capacity building support and mentorship to the Asian community. Anthony mentioned before that we're also the only Census Information Center currently that serves the Asian community in the whole Northeast region. Through that partnership with the Census Bureau, we work heavily on census issues throughout the decade. being part of the process of evaluating the race and ethnic questions, what languages are covered, language support, and different things like that. So we are heavily invested in the census because we rely on that data for a lot of the research that we do, and so every 10 years we step up and help make sure that the Asian American community is counted. So what is the census? Okay, half of you already know this answer by judging from your T-shirt, right? So how many of you don't know what the census is? So I get a gauge of how many slides I can skip. Ahmed, I'm going to yell at you when I get back to the office. The census is done once every 10 years. The whole point of the census, it's the fundamental basis of our democracy, of our representative democracy. It's conducted every 10 years so that congressional seats can be reallocated. It's in the Constitution. The government must do it. And there are strict laws in place that prevent the information from being used against you. Any personally identifiable information cannot be shared by the Census Bureau to anybody external to the Census Bureau. People at the Census Bureau, all the staff are sworn to basically secrecy with penalties of up to $250,000 or 5 years in prison. So they really take it very seriously. And so that's also a really important message that we have to share, particularly to the immigrants and the Asian American community. But on the flip side, the census is really valuable for all of our communities. Like I said before, we use it for our advocacy work. We use it to be able to quantify and show the need in the community, but also the contributions of Asian Americans across our communities, in the workforce, as members of the community, and things like that. So it's really important that we, as a community, get counted because we want to be represented. We want to show that we are present in this country and we're an active and vital part of our communities. Blah, blah, blah. Census matters because of funding. So that's the other thing. It's interesting and it's important because it's, schools are funded by census data, healthcare, roads, job training, integration services like ESOL classes are also dependent on how the numbers play out, so the government knows where to deliver the funding to. New York, according to research done by George Washington University, received $73 billion in funding from the federal government in 2016. We're projected to have 26 congressional seats, although I have to double check on that, in 2020. I think recent projections may have put it to 27 congressional seats, which is good, because that represents political power in Washington, D.C. And then the data is also used to redistrict at all levels. And redistricting is a whole other ball of wax that we can always come back and discuss on another day. But it's also important for that. Why isn't the census important for Asian Americans in particular? We are the fastest growing population in the United States, bar none. It's not just in the U.S., but also in New York, New York City, New York State, New Jersey. A lot of it is driven by immigration, but increasingly it's also being driven by second generation births as well. The Census Bureau, in their planning for the census, actually do surveys and try to gauge what people's attitudes are for the census. And they found in their preliminary work that Asian Americans were the least likely to say they would respond to the census. Part of it is because they're unaware of what the census is about and what the benefits are. Sometimes they are just reluctant because of concerns about the data being used against their communities and themselves. And so, as a consequence, immigrants, non-English speakers, young children, seniors, and low-income individuals are all at risk within the Asian American community of being undercounted. And all of these individuals are at a high percentage of the population here in New York City. So a lot of you probably can guess what the barriers to participation are. There's the fear and distrust of government, particularly in the climate that we have around immigration policies and different immigration enforcement concerns. Language access is language is another barrier to participation. For example, the Census Bureau has a paid media campaign, and they've decided not to fund any paid media in South Asian languages because of both budget concerns and also what they judge as the English ability for within South Asian communities. But for us, we pushed back and said that they need to do advertising because it's not particularly language access, but also inclusivity, making a community feel like that they're welcomed and part of the fabric of our communities. There is also a new way. The 2020 will be the first census that will be online. Responses will be accepted, and they primarily want people to do it online because it's cheaper for them to run the census that way. But computer literacy is going to be a challenge. Access to the internet is going to be a challenge, and so that is another concern that we have to barriers to participation. And finally, we estimate about 1 in 4 Asians or Asian immigrants arrived in the United States after 2010. So a large chunk of the Asian community has never been through a census in the United States. And so as a consequence, there's a lack of awareness and understanding what the census is about. I'm going to silence this. And so that's another thing that we have to overcome. It's just sheer outreach. We have to just talk to people. And so that's going to take time and energy. And fortunately, a lot of our organizations already that we work with are already doing that. There's some strategies, some messaging strategies that we can do to overcome the barriers, particularly around the concern about misuse of data. I mentioned before, there are laws in place, very strong privacy laws that are in place that prevent the Census Bureau from releasing the data. Or even giving access to the data to any other government agency, any private entities, and they take it very seriously. Another way is to work with community leaders that are trusted voices and sharing with them the vital nature of the census and having them deliver the message to the community. And then finally, developing in language materials, because that'll help us overcome the language barrier. There is a lot of great work that's being done across the country from different community groups that are providing translated materials and developing multilingual staff and training them up so that they can talk about the census, just so that we can reach these hard-to-count communities. And a lot of that work is ongoing and growing. There's also looking for places where we can provide local resources to help people with limited internet access or limited computer literacy to help them fill out the census. Libraries are particularly involved this time around in the census. They've gotten funding to create more secure computer terminals to help people fill out the census, and they're working with community groups to provide language assistance to help people fill out the forms. And then there's also organizing trainings, events like this also to help fill in the gaps, helping create people who are going to be census ambassadors out in the community and be able to talk to the members of their community about the census. And then finally, we want to really make sure that when we finally talk to people and convince them how to fill out the census, that we also have the right information to help them actually do the census. Because it's such a new process this time around, there's going to be a lot of confusion, and a lot of people that went through the 2010 census are expecting to be mailed a paper form, and they're not going to see that, and there's going to be some confusion, and people are going to ask questions, and we've got to be ready for that with a response. So the consequences, before, if we don't, we'll get less of our resources, we'll get less representation, and that just impacts quality of life overall. I also want to show, why the data is important to me, right? So I love data. That's why I have this job. So if you look at how important the data is, not just for me, but also to show where Asians are, that Asians are present. This is the Asian community in the metro area in 1980. You see concentrations in Elmhurst, Manhattan, Chinatown, Flushing, but a lot of the areas are really light pink, and some places are even, you know, white, where there's like no presence at all. And this is the full count, so we pretty much know if it's close to zero, it's really close to zero, if not zero at all. Jump ahead, I think 30 years, 2010. So it's the same scale. It's all red now. You got Asians everywhere. You got Asians all over North Jersey. You got Asians moving into Long Island, moving up Westchester, all over Manhattan, and then Brooklyn, southern Brooklyn is, you know, you have a huge Asian community that has emerged in the 30 years since 1980. That just, it's a powerful statement, right? We count, we matter, we are everywhere, and we should be part of the decision-making process that happens in all of the communities where they live. And you're seeing it more and more in representation, more and more in political participation, and more and more access to services. So this is the 2018 numbers, but it's an estimate, and it's from the American Community Survey. And this shows why it's really important to do a census instead of relying on surveys and statistics. And while they're powerful, you'll notice that there's a bunch of white regions. So we're not collecting any data in those areas for Asians. If you flip back to 2010, those areas, a lot of them have some pink in them. So we're really missing, you know, large chunks of our community by relying just purely on survey data. So I know there's some arguments in the community saying, oh, why do we need to do the census? The government already collects all of our information. But in reality, those administrative data and surveys are going to actually miss people because the census is so comprehensive in both its scope and outreach and manpower that it's really important to be able to once every 10 years reset the clock, reset the bar and the standard so that we have a better picture of our communities. So that's Asians. I've got a bunch of slides. I have Chinese, Korean, Indian, and Filipino. Anybody? Japanese, sorry, not Filipino, Japanese. Anybody interested in those? I can skip ahead if they're not interested, but you're interested. Okay. Some people are interested. All right. So similar issue here, right? So in the Chinese population, 1980, concentrated in Chinatown, emerging in Elmhurst, Flushing, and then you see a little few specks in Sunset Park. And then now you see tremendous growth. You see really dark, dark red areas all in southern Brooklyn, Chinatown, Elmhurst and Flushing, and then you see people moving out to Long Island. And you see Jersey has really seen a lot of growth in the Chinese population as well. And then 2018, you see a similar thing where you see light pink everywhere, so there's at least, we're reaching everybody, counting everybody, but then you see all of these white splotches start emerging from the estimate data. So again, the power and the need for a census. Korean population, similarly, Elmhurst, Flushing, some emerging pockets in Bergen County. 30 years later, you know, you got all this dark blue in Bergen County. You got the community moving out to Long Island, moving into Bayside and northeastern Queens. Again, the estimate shows a similar story. We're seeing, you know, you're missing some people when you do a survey and an estimate. And so while surveys are powerful because you can collect more detailed data, you really need to have a census as a baseline every 10 years. Indian population, you know, there's really not many concentrations, maybe Jackson Heights a little bit. 30 years later, you see huge growth in Jersey, and then you see the emerging Indo-Caribbean community that's down there in South Ozone Park, Jamaica, and then you see Elmhurst and Jackson Heights as an emerging community as well. And additionally, we're seeing more growth in the updated estimates, but again, it's spotted, there are gaps, and we need to have an accurate census. And the Japanese population, in 1980, you got you see them sort of in northern Jersey and in Westchester. They're moving further north and further out. But you'll notice that there's also a lot of Japanese that are in Manhattan now. A lot of it is young people going to college, but also a lot of second gen moving into Manhattan for jobs and things like that. So those were just four communities that I pulled together. We've looked at all of the major communities, and we can certainly share if anybody's interested in this in more detailed data. So the census timeline. So January's already passed. I don't know if anybody saw any of the ads that are out there. It'd be interesting to know if anybody of you watch ethnic media, because they do have an ad campaign on television and print and all that stuff. Anybody seen anything? No? Oh, no. You're spending millions and millions of dollars and nobody's seen anything? Okay, all right. That shows you the importance of community outreach, right? So March 12th is when the invitation letters go out. They will be rolling out so that they don't crash the servers. So, you know, 1/7 of the nation will get their mail on March 12th. Another 1/7 will get in the subsequent days. March 16th, the reminder letter will go out. If you don't respond, they'll send another reminder, and then on the fourth reminder, you'll actually get a paper questionnaire. And that's the only way that you can get a paper questionnaire, is to have them mail it to you. You can't request it. You just have to wait for them to send you a paper questionnaire. So that's going to be a message that we might have to deliver to our seniors in our community who really just don't want to do it on a computer, and so that's the backup that we have. May 2nd is another important milestone. That's when the Census Bureau is going to start knocking on doors to people who hadn't responded. They want to really minimize that number, and that's why they're working with community groups to try to get self-response as high as possible. And that's what Steve is actually working on, to make sure that they have the right data to put into his hard-to-count map so that we as community members can look at the real-time data on self-response so that we can know, oh, hey, this community or this neighborhood is not doing as well as 2010. What are we going to do? Or what can we do? What languages are being spoken there? Who works in that neighborhood? Can we do a special event to try to increase self-response in those areas? So that's what Steve's working on. We got to make sure that the data is right. Otherwise, we'll be sending people to the wrong places. So I'm glad he's there. Unfortunately, I have to pick up the slack for him tonight. So what's new for the census? I mentioned it's the first digital census. How are we doing on time? I want to make sure I'm not... Okay. So paper notices, as I mentioned before, will be sent out. They will kind of look like this. You'll have a code on there that you'll enter in when you go to the census website. And then that's tied to your address. And so all of the censuses are based on counting everybody by your housing unit. It's not by families, it's not by households, it's by housing unit. So if you have many families living in one house, and that does happen in New York City, you have to make sure that everybody in that housing unit gets counted on one form. That's the most efficient way to do it. If families don't get counted on that form, there's still a way to enter in your address so that you don't have to have a code to fill out the census, and then the census in the back end will try to figure out where to match people and make sure that they're counted. You'll notice that the envelope is not addressed to a particular person. It's always to a resident, because they want to count who's there. They don't know who's there. That's why that's the whole point of doing the census.
So it gets sent out after to the people who didn't respond online.
This is the letter that gives you the instructions to respond online.
Oh, so this will be
sent to everybody. Okay. So then you will just follow the instructions. Hopefully they're clear. And then there's actually, so I'll mention there's going to be video guides to help people fill out the online form, which poses a problem if you don't have internet access. But there's also paper guides to help people fill out the paper form. And they'll be available in 59 languages. These are just the Asian languages. I think we're going to put back all 59 languages later, but I think we wanted to sort of highlight which Asian languages are being covered by the guides, and then the online forms are actually translated in 12 different languages plus English, and so several of them are Asian languages like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. Paper forms, however, are only available in English and Spanish, and only available by mail, which is not the case in 2010. So again, some of our seniors may be expecting to be able to get a paper Chinese form, and that's not going to happen. They're going to have to rely on a paper assistance guide to fill out an English form. And so, again, these pop-up centers, these assistance events are going to be really vital for our community to make sure that we have a complete count. What to expect? Well, the census asks 10 questions, and it roughly takes 10 minutes. And then they like to say it also impacts the next 10 years. So they're doing that as their slogan. On the census, they'll ask you how many people are living in your housing unit, your house, your apartment, whatever. Do you rent or do you own? And then a phone number, because sometimes people, they'll have questions about things and they want to make sure that they got the information right. So that's why they ask for a phone number. Then they'll ask for each person living in the house their name, their age, and date of birth, and gender, and the relationship to the person that's completing the form. So the person that's completing the form will be the first person, and every person after that will have a relationship question. And then finally, they'll ask your what they call ethnic origin, which is, you know, whether you're Hispanic, Latinx, or Spanish. Oh, and then another question, which is confusing to the Hispanic community, about your race, right? So race and Hispanic identity are separated in the census. What we want to do is make sure that people are clear about how to mark themselves off. You can mark multiple boxes if you're multiracial. You can write in if you don't see yourself in the examples or in the check boxes, particularly for the Asian community. You can check other Asian and write in what specifically you are or what you identify with. And it's the key is self-identification. And the Census Bureau has a lot of codes that they can take into account a whole range of different responses, and they've done a lot of testing on this question, so they know what to expect. So I think we need to encourage our communities to be as detailed as they want to be and feel safe in pride in responding the way that they want to. You can complete the form. You can actually call this time around and give the answers over the phone to a Census Bureau representative, or you can do it on your own smartphone, or you can do it on a computer, although they will time out for security reasons. So if you don't finish within, if you sit idle for half an hour, they'll wipe it out and you have to start all over again. The census will never ask citizenship or immigration status. They won't ask for Social Security or credit card numbers. They won't ask, salary and professions. It only asks those 10 questions. So if you see, if somebody comes to the door and asks for these things, then it's not a census thing and you don't have to respond. And you should probably, inform the Census Bureau that somebody in the neighborhood's pretending to be a census person. So I really want, and I think particularly the CUNY census people, you're already talking to more than 5 people, so hooray. But I'm hoping that people will take what they learn and share it with people from the community, because if everyone talks to 5 people and they convince them to talk to another 5 people, we're going to get it done. We're going to make sure that everybody gets counted. So I'm hoping that especially people that you know that are in those at-risk groups, families with young children, families with seniors, newer immigrants who just arrived in the country and are unfamiliar with the census. So if you know people like that, make sure you just have a conversation with them about the census and tell them how they can participate, why it's important to their communities, it's important to their children, and funding for schools and things like that. There's also a lot of efforts. The city's doing a lot of organizing. The CUNY Intern program is one of the examples, but there's also opportunities within neighborhoods to join local committees. They're calling them NOCs, Neighborhood Organizing Census Committees, to do door-to-door stuff or text banking or phone banking to talk to members of your neighborhood and convince them. There's talk about doing competitions with the neighborhoods, and I don't know how far that went, but they're saying maybe we'll do a block party for the neighborhood that does the best improvement since 2010. But, you know, there are ways of joining in and contributing and being part of something that's builds community and it's fun, and making it as fun as possible. If you are involved in organizations and they do community events or festivals, try to talk about the census or invite the Census Bureau or one of those citywide organizations or community organizations that's doing census work to those festivals and those community events, because that's a great opportunity to get people that are coming out that don't normally come out or normally hiding behind their doors or working hard on, you know, jobs, two or three jobs or whatever. So those are opportunities to get at people that might be harder to count. And then the final one is, you know, this slide was more for our member organizations, but try to get any organization, any group that you work with to commit to doing something about the census. It could just be one small event, right? Or just talking to your membership. I think as many people as we can talk to about the census as possible, the better. And so hopefully we can talk to you about ideas of how you can do that as well. I'm going to skip these. Oh, yeah, and social media. I think that particularly in the Asian community where it's so fragmented, right? We have Kakao Talk for the Korean community. We have, WeChat, something else for the Chinese community, Line for Japanese and Taiwanese communities. And so we really need to have people that already have an established presence and have some more voice on social media to talk about the census. And we need to give them the right information and make sure that they're sharing the right information. And you know, anybody who has presence on those sites, we would really love to work with you on creating messaging and doing that. Here's some examples of stuff that's being produced. An example from the New York Counts 2020 Coalition is on the top left. The APA Complete Count Committee has been doing a lot of the translated posters talking about the importance of the census. And the Census Bureau itself has created a lot of outreach materials in multiple languages to help people do this kind of work. So, you know, actually, I can probably now go to like what Steve presented about, which is the Census Hard to Count map, that project that he's been working on. I'll touch on it briefly. It's a really good product. It's a really good project. It's been invaluable to members of our community to figure out where we should be planning to go to do our work. You'll notice Jackson Heights did pretty well. Parts of Flushing did pretty well. And that's actually reflective of the work that we did in 2010. Well, the work that we helped fund. So there were a lot of groups that were doing really hard work. Chaya CDC and Minkwan are two examples, but there were 30 other groups that did a lot of great work to help raise those response rate numbers. And so you kind of see it being reflected in the data. You see that, you know, why is Jackson Heights here doing better than the regions around it? Well, Chaya CDC is right smack dab in the middle of that. You see over here, Minkwan is actually identified this particular block right here as a hard to count, and there's a lot of apartment buildings, and they did bilingual teams of Chinese and Korean communities, went door to door there, and so you see the impact there. You know, we only had about $500,000 to $600,000 to do all of this outreach across all of New York City, so we were only able to impact certain areas. This time around, we have a lot of support from the city and from the state, so we're looking to really improve overall self-response rates. And the reason self-response is important is because that's the most accurate information. The Census Bureau has done tons of testing. They find that any time you send somebody to the door, you get lower quality data. So we really want people to answer for themselves. And so that's the ideal situation that we want to have. There's a lot of, embedded in this is a lot of information about if you're working in one particular census tract, if you click on it, it'll give you information about how many Asians are there, how many blacks, how many Hispanics, whether they're immigrants, whether there are a lot of small young children. This is a really great website, and I'd be happy to, and I'm sure Steve would be happy to show you anybody how to use the website in more closely and in another environment. But it's really great if you're planning on doing census work, if you're just curious about your own community. It's a really great website to look at. So I'll leave it at that. I'll open it up to questions and discussion.
My question is, for those 1 in 4 that you mentioned that have probably arrived after the 2010 census and might not be familiar with it because of that, I'm curious if they might be familiar with it from the countries that they've immigrated from, if there's any information on kind of that context, if they've heard of it from those places.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of immigrants do carry attitudes from their home country. Not every country does a census, right? And then they also do the censuses in different ways. If I'm not mistaken, Korea still does door-to-door, but I'm not up on Korean census protocols, but I remember at least the last time I was looking at it, they were doing, they weren't doing self-response. They were doing actual enumerators going out and counting everybody. Other countries have, particularly China. China, I believe, does do a census as well, but they also have what's called a household registration system. So that's how they keep track of who's where and that kind of thing. So, and then the challenge with the census in the United States is that it's if you look at the deep history of censuses, they were actually done so that the government, the king, could tax people. So censuses in our deep history are not exactly a wonderful thing, right? But in the United States, it's a fundamental part of our representative democracy. So it's something that we have to, it's a first step to civic participation. It's a first step, it's something that any new American, if you get off the plane, fresh off the plane, and you intend to stay and live here on April 1st, you count on the census, right? So it's the first civic thing that you can do as a new American. Then you work your way up to a green card, or if you already have a green card to citizenship, then you register to vote and you start running for office and that kind of thing. But census is like the first thing you can do. So I think that makes it different from other countries, perhaps. So we just have to, flip that switch for people.
So the starting in May, when the enumerators are going door to door to start encouraging people that hadn't responded online or by phone, that's where we need the trusted volunteers in the neighborhood to accompany them, right? Because volunteers can't go knock on doors on their own.
I think that's another important way that you can participate in the census is to actually become a census enumerator. The Census Bureau, because of the economy, is doing fairly well as having, they won't say it out loud, but they're kind of having a hard time filling enumerated positions, particularly people from the community with language expertise. And so I would encourage people who are willing to work a few hours on weekends or in the evenings, because that's when people are at home, to sign up, and it actually pays pretty well, $28. Rimshaw, you're laughing. You're going to do it, right? Rimshaw's my research associate who does a lot of the number crunching with me, and you know, we've been talking about her, you know, she wants to do some work so for the Census Bureau. So I think it's really important that people do that. I think the Bureau does not want to confuse people, and so they're not going to have, they don't want to have volunteers or community spokespeople with the Census Bureau person collecting the data, because only the Census Bureau person sworn to protect the data. So if the volunteer is going with them, then they can't necessarily fill out the form in the presence of somebody that's not special sworn status with the Census Bureau. So that becomes a really, and the Bureau has actually given us guidance to say that we shouldn't be doing door-to-door canvassing at the same time they are doing the door-to-door phase of the Census Bureau. So we really have to be cautious. It doesn't mean we can't do outreach. We should do outreach where people are gathering, congregating, but we can do phone banking and text banking and email messaging, but we really shouldn't be in the field at the same time the Census Bureau is, just to avoid confusion. So,
sorry, I think you lost me a bit there. So then the volunteers kind of just help with, like, at community events or, like, gathering spaces to, like, spread the word about it?
Yeah, I mean, initially, before the census goes into the field on May 2nd, I think some groups will be doing door-to-door canvassing, because mm-hmm. there's no risk of confusing. I mean, there's still some risk confusing those volunteers with actual Census Bureau employees. But when the Census Bureau is actually sending people out in the field, I think they don't want us to be, they don't want us, they're sending plenty of people out there. They don't want us, people stepping on toes. And so, yeah, I mean, there's some debate within the community whether that's a good idea or not. But I think that, by and large, I think we're going to respect the Bureau's wishes on that issue.
Well, I mean, this is interesting because in my village, we have our own complete count committee,
uh-huh.
and we're specifically looking for volunteers to walk with the enumerators because Sleepy Hollow is majority Latinx,
mm-hmm.
and there is the concern about ICE that the people deported.
Right.
So the feeling is like they won't answer the door unless there's a trusted, you know, community-based person that's with the enumerator before they will open the door. But you're saying that there's a conflict as far as privacy of information.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a solution that you think is a priority for your community. You probably should talk to the Census Bureau field team.
We are. We're working
so if they if they're open to it. And if they can figure out the protocol, like the person introduces and steps back, right? And then you that. So you want to make sure. The key thing is the coordination, right?
Yeah.
So we don't want to be doing the same one thing without telling the Census Bureau.
Yeah,
the
other
thing. So,
Yeah. Census.
So that model is a great model, but. What we don't want is for us to be out there and not knowing that they're there, and then we just get confusion.
So to avoid stepping on toes or like to respect protocol, is there like a specific census contact per like neighborhood, mm-hmm. or I'm asking from perspective of like a community organization that is worried that the enumerators out in the field won't have the language or like cultural competency
mm-hmm.
to assure that the census is in their benefit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the initial touch point would be Jeff Baylor, regional director, who's in charge of all of the field operations within a large area, but within New York City in particular. And then he'll figure out who's the best person to talk to about field operations. So they do have local census offices that are in charge of particular areas in New York City, and then that's ultimately where you would probably be coordinating with. I think the ideal solution is to get your own people hired by the Census Bureau to be actual enumerators, so that kind of merges that function, so the community, trusted community voices is the actual person that's doing the enumeration as well, because that combines trust, language, cultural awareness, that kind of thing, and neighborhood awareness as well. Yeah. And I know they're still hiring, and I know they really want to have quality candidates that are from the community, so...
And enumerators don't have to be U.S.
they can be work authorized if the Bureau cannot find equivalent U.S. citizens, right? So, you know, yes. Short answer, yes, but complicated.
CUNY Census Corps is for CUNY students to mobilize people in our individual communities, because we, like what you guys were talking about with the enumerators, we, like, know the culture in our communities. We have, like, language skills, so we, like, do outreach in our individual communities. So we're placed in community-based organizations. The New York City Census Field Team, and also our campuses. So it's places that people know us and where we know the culture, so we can, like, easily, you know, mobilize people there.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question for the Corps, because college students are notoriously hard to count, surprisingly, and also really easy to overcount. So I'm just wondering if they told you how you guys are going to be counted. Yeah, go ahead.
So essentially, the way it was communicated was that you should be counted wherever you're living at the time. And so the way it was explained to me, at least, was that if you're sort of facing some uncertainty about whether you should be counted where you're, like, dorming or at home, mm-hmm. what you should do is, like, tell your parents to count you anyway. And if you have a residence here that you get the census form, you can count yourself where you are currently.
Okay.
And there are people doing the statistics of the census who will make sure that duplicate persons are removed from it. Like, there's a process
right.
for that.
Right.
So they said it's better to be overcounted than undercounted.
Right.
Because if you don't submit anything at all, no one's going to know you're there, versus having two versions of the same person that can be removed.
Right. I actually had a more fundamental question, which is, are you guys getting forms, or is the university going to respond for you? Because those are two options, and universities are given the choice. So, and one is better than the other, and you can guess which one I think is better than the other. So it sounded like CUNY dorm residents will get a form. Is that correct?
I personally don't know about that.
Okay. Great. That's my preference. Great. That's my preferred method, self-response. Because there are some group quarters, like not only dorms, but also prisons, senior homes, and things like that, where the facility will respond for the individual. And in that case, we lose detail, particularly racial ethnic detail. And so I'm glad to hear that. I was concerned about that for CUNY and other places. Make sure you fill out your forms. Okay. All right. Thank you.